Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Facebook. We're live on YouTube. We're live on Twitch. We're live on Twitter. We're live everywhere. We are worldwide, baby.
We're live on PBS, ABC, CBS, and NBC. It's like a superhero movie, and we've taken over the airwaves because we have an evil plan we're concocting.
Yes, maybe you're listening later on an audio podcast. If you're doing that, that is all good as well. We are excited to greet you anyway. And this is the first live show the three of us have done together in a while, right?
Really?
I'm forgetting.
That's true. I was out of town for work last week out in Los Angeles for less than 36 hours, a healthy amount of time to travel anywhere.
Wow, that sounds very intense.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is...
We should say also that Pete was away because he travels by train to places. Yeah, like, right. Whistle Stop LePage, we call him. Toot, toot!
Well, I will say, actually, Pete, you were in New Orleans with Brett Backris. You had dinner on the show last week. Mm-hmm. But we just found this out. You also did a tour of Cloak & Dagger locations.
Yeah, it was so cool. He was pointing out all the stuff from Cloak & Dagger, different warehouses used in shots and stuff like that. And I saw the Roxxon building. So that was really, it was fun. It was
wow, they nice still have that. They're still operating after everything.
Yeah, you would think. Yeah, yeah. Wow.
How many other people were on the tour with you? Was it just like a lot of C&D fans? Did you get recognized from Cloak & Jabber or Cloak & Dagger podcast?
Yeah, were they wearing the shirts? Were they wearing the shirts?
I love the shirts.
People coming up to you and be like, hey, babe. Hey, man. Hey, baby.
They say, hey, baby, which was his nickname on the podcast.
Yeah. Pancakes hey, baby. And waffles. Were they like,
I'm Alex. I'm Justin. I'm baby. Let's get into Cloak & Jabber.
Well, listen, we have a lot of stuff to talk about on this podcast. We have two great guests that we're going to get to in a moment. But this is also the time of the month where we pay a little bit of tribute to our awesome Patreon supporters. You support us at the $5 or above level. We read off your name as a thank you. So let's get into it, kicking it off with Oitis Larson,
Aaron C. Hollis,
Adam DeRose,
Adam Horowitz,
Adam Marks,
Adriel Moreland,
Elena Fontenot,
Amanda Harris,
the mysterious Andrew,
Andrew Primo,
Andrew Tillman,
Bearcat PhD,
Benjamin Brown,
Carly W. Up,
Carrie Matthews,
Chris Leatherman,
Christina Jarmarillo,
Christina Rensfield,
Chris Terlizzi,
Clemens Lua,
Curtis LaRock,
Deman Ryan,
Damien Betkin,
Dan Snow,
Daniel Cabral,
Daniel Fuentes,
Danny Heck,
Debbie Gloom,
Dennis Scott,
Derek Mainhart,
Doug Sadaway,
Dylan LJ,
Eduardo Martinez,
Emmett Quish,
Aaron Dorian,
Jeffrey Risher,
Gerard DeVilliers,
Isaac Carter,
Jake Fry,
James Connolly,
James Kurtz,
Jaron Townsend,
Jason Donahue,
Jeffrey Whaley,
John George,
Jonathan Jong,
Jonathan McCool,
Joshua W. Broxson,
Julian Lobato,
Casey Newhaven,
Kevin Grimes,
Kevin Kleinrock,
Kieran Broderick,
Cody Thomas,
Luana Thomas,
Lucas Sink,
Mark Zeller,
Matt Tice,
Matthew C. Hernandez,
Michael Tillman,
Nelson Kelso Martinez,
Nick Grayson,
official CBC chef and local tour guide Brett Macris,
Oren Dix,
Pedro A. Wrangle,
Pete's Pretty Kitty, Puff the Fluff Baby is what it says.
Oh, man.
Prime Banana Comics.
Nice. Provocative Ambulance.
Rev Mikey.
Robert Pettinato.
Sarah Schottenmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Tamela Rush.
Taylor Bryant.
Terrible, Jason.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Bench.
Thomas Glenn.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
William Leach.
Zachary Bachman.
And Zika's Viral Comics.
Thank you all so much, seriously, for supporting us at patreon.com/comicbookclub. We seriously could not support and continue the show.
Thank you.
Could not and would not.
We would refuse. We would flat out refuse. But at any level, thank you so much for supporting the show. If you would like to, $2 and up, you not only get access to our very fun, very active Patreon Slack, but you also get our entire back catalog of all of our podcasts going all the way back to 2011. That is literally thousands of podcasts for you to listen to.
That's because we were the only podcast back then.
Yeah, we invented it. I believe. We were like, what if we did talkies for the internet?
Yeah, Michael Barbaro kept coming by being like, what are you guys doing over here? And then pretty soon, there goes the Daily.
Yeah. Couple of other quick things to talk about before we get into our show. Now, we mentioned our official CBC chef, Brett Macris, aka Stray Bullies. There you go. He often will design or curate a drink for us every week. And this week, I don't know if it's a tribute so much as a consolation prize for Shazam Fury of the Gods. He designed a drink called the Shazamily, which I made one of them over here.
Looks delicious.
It's so good. So
the
delicious.
The color is perfect.
I can't show you the lightning bolt lemon peel that I made. That's the thing. Like, you put a little.
Why can't you show us that?
Why can't you show it to
yeah,
us?
That seems like the coolest part of the whole thing.
I mean, it fell in also is the other thing. But
wow, man, that drink's better than the feature film.
Thank you. Pretty much. Woof, I really messed up my setup here, and I hope that sounded awesome on the audio podcast. but very good drink, very exciting, definitely better than the movie. And also, I'll mention as a little plug, we got our new podcast, Sons of a Gun, a DC podcast, and we did a whole episode about Shazam 2 that went up earlier this week.
We did
definitely check that out. We were all very pleasant discussing it.
Right? Like human, cordial human beings is what we call ourselves. It's just Alex, Justin, and Baby hanging out.
There you go. Well, listen, let's bring in our sweet little babies, as we call our guests on the show. Yep. More specifically, our first guest, he is the creator of Isolation, a book out of Swolger Publishing. Ladies and gentlemen, Doug Bratton. Hello, Doug.
Hey,
welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for coming on. This is a fascinating book that seems like a tough hill to conquer, just in terms of logistically when you're putting it together, because it is a murder mystery or a mystery book that takes place in multiple time periods at the same time. You're working with multiple artists. Very ambitious project. Where did this idea first come from, and what did it start with that, or you're like, oh, I have an idea for a comic, and then you got it at a certain point, you're like, oh no, oh, this is a lot.
Years ago, I was a syndicated newspaper cartoonist, and I would keep a notebook of just ideas of other projects, because you can't, you know, you can't do it all. And that's where Isolation started. I got in trouble for telling this story, but I'm going to tell it again here.
All right.
I was a fan when the television series Lost first came out.
I've never heard of this show. This is so, Alex mentions it.
And
you liked it, right?
At the beginning, it was an interesting mystery series, but then meandered. And by the end, you realized they either didn't have a clue where they were going with it, or they just got so off track they couldn't kind of.
Doug, thank you so much for coming to the show. It was a pleasure. Have a great day.
Doug, we're starting a separate show right now, and Alex isn't a part of it.
This is why I get in trouble, because I loved the show. I felt that the writing got off track, and it frustrated me as a writer, and I felt, well, I'd like to try and write something like that, a mystery, but where I took the time and really developed and figured everything out before I brought it out into the world. And that was kind of where Isolation started. And it stayed in a notebook, and I would just kind of keep notes and ideas for a long time. until I figured everything out and how to make it work. So the reason I got in trouble for this before is sometimes people get mad because I'm not dogging on Lost, but at the same time, other people, when they hear it was an inspiration, they're like, oh, he has no idea where this is going. So, and I do.
Yes. You have to clarify. And I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, talk a little bit about then putting together the art team for the book, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So when the comic was greenlit by the publisher, Reggie Simmons, who, if people are comic book collector world YouTube fans, he's known as Reggie Collects on YouTube. Oh. We assembled a team of artists through the Joe Kubert School of nice. Comic and cartoon art. And part of that is because I live about 5 minutes away from the Kubert School. I grew up in the area. I actually took Saturday morning classes when I was little that Joe Kubert himself taught.
Oh, wow. That's so awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I've just been a fan of the school for many, many years. The new owner, when Joe passed, his sons, Adam and Andy, ran the school for a while. Yeah. And then they, I don't know if sold, turned it over, whatever, to Anthony Marquez, who's a Batman artist, great guy.
Unbelievable guy. We love him. Ruthman,
former Ruthman for this very show.
Oh, very cool. So, yeah, so I've known Anthony for years. And
amazing guy.
When Reggie Green lit it, he said, can you help me find the art team? And I went right to the Kubert School. So all the artists on it are Kubert School graduates.
Cool.
Well, talk a little bit about coordinating those artists so you're getting what you need out of it so it still feels like one cohesive piece.
Yeah, so the first two issues, the cover and the interior art, are done by the lead artist Delia Gunderson, but she had an artist assistant, Elena Morton, who would help her kind of transfer her layouts and kind of flesh out some of the backgrounds, things like that. Delia has an amazing kind of she essentially paints in black and white. And that takes a while, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
It gives it an amazing depth, but it's time consuming as well. And we knew that if the series kind of caught, we'd have to bring in other artists. And Chase Cowan who is another Kubert School graduate, we pulled into the project to kind of help with the heavy lifting.
Looks like it's worth the wait, though. I mean, that art is really fantastic.
Yeah, it looks great. Yeah. Can you tell us about the story? We know that it's not like Lost, but so far that's all we know.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
It's a terrible pitch.
Not to everybody.
So it's more of a Cagney and Lacey type thing. Those are the two.
Yeah,
those are the two shows. You're saying it is Penny's Boat. Alex, now, Doug, tell us about the actual story.
Sure. So Isolation is a mystery series that follows a researcher, Mandy Connors, who discovers a secretive, hidden kind of cult community in Louisiana and through her research. And there were three distinct time periods of extreme killing and murder. And the overarching story is about Mandy and her research and the dangers that that she faces because of her learning of Isolation. And then it's told in essentially three story arcs of 1869, the first year of murder, 1919, the second year, and then 1949, the third year. And ultimately, Isolation disappears from existence and is kind of erased from history, which is why her discovery of it kind of leads to other dangers and mystery.
One of the things that I thought was interesting, and I think we should mention, correct me if I'm wrong, but the first two issues are out now. You're working on the third one, which should be out soon. Do you have a date yet?
Yeah, the third one's done. And
Oh, no.
Which is great because the publisher did a Kickstarter, but that comes out in about 1 to 2 weeks.
Oh, okay, great. So I feel comfortable mentioning this in the vaguest terms possible, but you have a ton of timeline stuff in the first issue. Like it jumps all over the place and establishes all these timelines. And then I thought it was very interesting that you really settle it down a little bit in the second and third issue to really concentrate more on specific aspects of the story. Talk to me a little bit about that structure just in terms of the series issue by issue.
Yeah. So the structure that you see in issue two is more in line what you'll see throughout the series, which is really a focus on one time period, but with some connections to the 1992, which is when Mandy, the researcher, is that's her story's timeline. The reason that I started off issue number one with all four, and I don't continue that, is first of all, it's challenging enough. There are a lot of characters because of the fact that it is about a lot of murders that take place in a short period of time. But in issue number one, I really wanted to establish all four time periods. And without spoiling anything, I wanted to establish certain elements that are a little bit outside, I guess, the norm. So it wouldn't be jarring if it was introduced later in the story. So the overall structure of the series, issue one shows all four time periods. The next 10 issues really focus primarily on 1869 with some of the framing of Mandy Connors. And then we go back at the end in issue number 12 that brings back all four time periods together and starts to connect some of the dots that that are first set out at the beginning of the story.
Nice. We got a couple of questions here on YouTube. This one is from Derek Mainhart. Says, question for Doug. How does someone...
Either a friend or a horrible enemy.
Yes. How does someone with your boyish charm and all-American good looks come up with such twisted shit?
Thanks, Derek. I love mysteries. I always have. Like the isolation, while certainly a fictional place, is set in a real place, which is Louisiana, and the different time periods that it is set in also are very important historically. And so real history is also a part of this. And I think some of my interest in nonfiction history definitely was inspiring as I was kind of creating the story.
Well, that ties into the follow-up here again from Derek Mainhart, who says, what kind of research did you do regarding the different time periods?
Quite a bit. Some of which I don't want to get into much because there are surprises that connect to different time periods. But
it's the part you don't want to get into, murder, right? Like you try a little bit just to sort of get a sense for it.
Yeah. Alex, that's a spoiler. History is a spoiler here. Sorry. Especially the M word.
I will say that each of the time periods, and this is not, I mean, if anybody reads issue number one, you'll get this. The four main time periods are each right after a war that America fought in. So it's shortly after the Civil War and connects with that history. 1919, shortly after the end of World War I, and then 1949, shortly after World War II. And all of those things play into the different stories and the different periods of murder.
Awesome. Mm. So where could people get this book if they want to check it out?
The easiest place to find it online is the publisher's website, which is reggiecollects.com. And you can still get copies of issue number one and two. Issue number three, he did it a little differently. He had like a pre-order Kickstarter, and it did sell out in pre-orders. He might have some extra copies, and there are some LCSs that have picked it up. So you can find them there. And hopefully we'll put together a trade as well. I think because issue 3 sold out, there's a chance he might sell that digitally. And you can actually get a free copy of issue number 1 down that you can download digitally from reggiecollects.com as well, if you just want to check it out and see if it's for you.
That's great. Oh, what a nice. Great way in.
Yeah, I love it. Doug, congratulations on the book. It is twisty. It is fun. Even with your lost slander, I'm still into the book. So congratulations on everything. It's great stuff.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for having me. Thanks, Doug. Have a good night.
Appreciate it.
All right. Once again, the book is called Isolation. Like we mentioned, you can check out the first two issues right now. The third issue coming soon. That's from Doug Bratton. Cool. And Pete.
I thought you were gonna close your lost box down. You're just gonna shut it out of shame.
Oh, just like no,
because you were reaching for it when he was talking. I thought you were like, oh, don't.
No. I just like here. I like it. For anybody who's listening on the audio podcast, I have my nerd shelf behind me, and on there is a mega set of Lost that is shaped partially like the structure from the end of Lost, and if you open it up, there's like secrets inside it, everything. I like to have it behind me because every once in a while I like to just reach back and feel it
and touch it
and touch it so it's that I know that it's there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nice. Good stuff, man.
It's not creepy at all.
Not creepy at all. You know who else is not creepy is our next guest. He is part of another historical project. It's a whole lot. My segues are terrible tonight. Yes.
No. I think that's a fine segue. It's just to be introduced. Someone's like, hey, it's my buddy. He's not creepy. Sort of controversial. Yeah,
lots of questions about me not being creepy have been answered on my shirt where it says I am not creepy. But he's not. He has a fascinating project that he's been part of and has a very specific part of it, specifically script writing and research. The new project is called Bywater, the Felix Mann's Story from Plow Publishing House. Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Momsen. Hello, Richard. Welcome.
Hey. Thanks so much for having me on.
No problem. So this is publish day, right? Like the book.
This is pub day. Yeah, it's big day.
How are you feeling? How has your day been so far?
Well, just really excited to that I can finally see the world, and looking forward to seeing how people like it. And all signs are good so far.
Excellent.
Do you mean the world of the book, or have you been trapped in isolation working on this until today? And you're finally released.
Well, as script writer, like I kind of like let go of it a while ago. Other than just sort of, you know, peeking in at the work the artists were doing toward the end. So, this is a big moment. We've been working on this for a while, and it's pretty exciting.
So, let's talk about this just to kind of set up the project. It's based on the true story of Felix Mads, who was alive during the Restoration. It's very much a religiously seeped book that shows this period of time in the life of religion. It follows it. It goes into very dark and serious places over the course of it. So I'm curious to delve into all of that and talk about that. But just from a structural way, I'm curious about your role on the book, because there is a writer, there is an artist, but you're the script writer and you did the research. So what was putting together this project like for you?
Yeah, so my background is really in script writing for video, for the web, and I've done some theatrical script writing and done a couple feature-length films. So Jason Lanzel's a friend of mine. He's the sort of the creative director and the primary author of this work. And he's been thinking about this story for about 25 years. And he asked me to sort of come in to just provide that, you know, structure that a script brings to it. So I kind of approached it like I would approach a movie script. And then the way I see it is Jason is sort of like the director, producer, and then Sanka is kind of like Sanka Banerjee is the artist, is really the, the cinematographer who sort of makes everything. So it was a really, I'd never done anything like this before. So it's just a really fun experience, a very fun creative experience working in partnership with these guys.
Cool. Well, could you talk a little bit about what is your background with comics, if any?
Really no background other than as a consumer, as a kid reading comics.
Well, where did you start then? What was your first love? as a comic reader?
So Hergé, Tintin, big nice. Fan, Asterix, that kind of stuff. Other than that, that was about it. So like historical stuff.
All right. Well, that panned out very nicely with this project then.
Yeah,
so, do me a favor. Could you describe what this is about better than I did? Because I bangled it horribly.
For the non-man's heads out
for
there.
For the non-man. Well, there are very few man's heads, which is why kind of why we did this story.
The Manziacs.
The Manziacs. Yeah. So 500 years ago in Europe, Western Europe, was a pretty tumultuous, time period. You know, there was a lot of, revolution was in the air, and, you know, there was a lot of upheaval, people feeling restless, a lot of oppression of the underclass, of the peasantry. And into this comes a new translation of the Bible. So the Christian Bible. So people are reading the words in the Bible. They're also reading, you know, other sources, Homer. They're going back to the original Greek. Thomas More has published his epic Utopia, describing like what's the perfect society look like. So Felix Mantz is sort of born into this milieu, and he is inspired to imagine what a new world could look like, and he sets out to put that into practice, and ends up running into conflict with authorities, and ends up getting killed for his for what he believes, basically. So that's a broad outline.
I mean, I imagine a new Bible dropping would have been a big reboot. Like, it's like when they rebooted Spider-Man, and it was like, it's a little soon. We're still into
it. Yeah, I mean, was his Bible, would you say it was more the Tobey Maguire of Bibles, the Andrew Garfield of Bibles, or the Tom Holland of Bibles?
Well, basically what you had back then, right? So you had this power structure. The major power structure with the Catholic, was the Catholic Church, right? They had everything in hand. Your life was completely governed by what they said, right? From the moment you were born, you were baptized as an infant into the church. And from then on, you were basically subject to whatever the church said, right? So these guys, when they actually read the Bible, they're like, you know what? That's actually not what it says there. What it says there is there should be freedom. This should be a completely voluntary thing. There should be no, you know, people should not be compelled to believe one thing or another. It should be something that is taken on freely. They also said, you know, the Bible says there should be like economic sharing. There should not be injustice between rich and poor. There should not be violence. So what they were really imagining was a utopian society. And they said, what we have isn't it. So we're going to make it. And that's what they tried to do in the city of Zurich in Switzerland, which you can see on the map here.
That sounds very Tom Holland, I would say.
yeah.
Well, in terms of Tom Holland, it's really interesting. I would say one of the things that I thought was the most fascinating when I was reading through this is you tend to get, like, through comics, you either get a take that's really about religion, that's really breaking it down and trying to poke holes in it, and or using it as a metaphor if we're talking about superhero comics. Or on the other hand, if you're doing some sort of real life thing, not to slag off a specific publisher, but you get like the Blue Water thing, which is like a cheapy cash in, here's history and that's it. But this is very respectful and really delves into it. And it doesn't shy away from the negative parts, but it's also not necessarily critical of religion so much as actually talking about the history there. What was it like when you were all putting together in terms of walking that line?
Well, I mean, a huge part of this obviously was the research. So Jason, who's the primary author, he actually visited these historical sites with his family. He spent quite a bit of time in Zurich. He, you know, visited all the sites that you see in this book as much as they still exist. And then we just did a ton of background work, reading not just about this particular story, but about like what was the political situation back then. You know, how did crime and punishment look? How did people socialize? What did they do in their free time? What got them excited? So there was just a ton of work that went in over years on Jason's part, and then I sort of, you know, took everything that he had pulled together and just we kind of marinated in this period of history, which is just an extremely interesting, not at all, you know, people talk about the Dark Ages. I mean, these people are extremely interesting. There was a lot of really, really interesting stuff going on at this time.
In the sort of the way the art is broken out here is there's a lot of panels like the page we're seeing on the screen where it's like really storytelling panels, a lot of things happening. And then you break out into these real beautiful images. Is that something from a script writing sense you were like, I want to make sure we're sort of going in and out like that? Or did the artist sort of drive that?
I got to give Jason and Sanka all the credit for that. They really had it in their head. And my job was just to try to like keep the story. Well, there were so many different rabbit holes you could have gone down, right? And what I had to keep telling the guys is like, we're not Dostoevsky, you know, we got 120 pages to tell a story. Let's keep it focused, you know.
Now, this is also the first of three volumes. So again, not to keep focusing on the workflow, but I think this is very unique in terms of comics. Was this set up in a way where you could provide your part of the first book, then they could be working on the first book while you're prepping the second book?
Yeah, that's how it's working. That's how it's working right now. I actually just finished the script for the second book, which is called By Fire. And the third one's called By the Sword. So while I'm doing that, they were finishing this one off. And of course I was involved to the end just with commenting on different things, but yeah.
Now, not to put you on the spot, but I am curious about this. And if you don't feel comfortable as answering 100% cool.
What are you about to do?
Well, but this is a book about religion. And I don't know what your religious background is. I don't know anything about you there. I was curious whether delving into this history, given whatever your religious background is, if it changed your perspective on religion at all. Ooh. Or if it kept it the same as it was.
Well, so I'm actually a descendant of the people the story is about. I belong to an Anabaptist community. That's
What? That's a crazy reveal. Yeah. So you're telling a part of your own history.
Yeah, and Jason in particular is married to someone who's a direct descendant of these folks. And wow. we actually still live in a intentional community where all the members share everything in common. So this is like very much our story.
Wow. So what was that like then? Did you feel, did you feel any hesitance in terms of doing this? Did you get calls from like Aunt Margaret being like, you better not say anything about Uncle Felix, I swear to God.
Yeah. No, not at all. We're extremely proud of it. And, you know, I think these people were onto something about, you know, concerns that are very contemporary about like economic justice, about, you know, freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, you know, stuff that people still talk about today. So I think the story like has a lot of resonances with the world we live in right now, which is why we're excited to bring it out.
And so this book for your own community seems to that will have a lot of meaning. Have you given like, have other people in the community read it? And is it going to be I feel like it's going to be something that it's like time to read and talk, like the book club is going to pop for this. It's
great. Yeah. People have really appreciated it. They've enjoyed it. But hopefully it reaches a broader audience than people who already know the story, which is why we thought the graphic novel format would be just a great way to tell a story to people who have no clue about the Reformation or especially this little part, the Radical Reformation.
It is. I didn't know anything about it, and I didn't know anything about Felix Manz. And I think speaking from a comic book fan perspective, beyond just the story, the art is so stunning and gorgeous. I mentioned this specifically for anybody listening on the audio podcast. It's so involving. My background, I'm Jewish, so I have no relationship with this whatsoever. But you get into the story because the art draws you in, and that's an in to talk about these subjects that may necessarily be alien for a large part of the audience, like we're talking about. So worked for me, I guess, is the short.
Well, and that was very cool because Sanka Banerjee, he's from Calcutta, India. He comes from a Hindu background and has experience, you know, with comics, but mostly, you know, in that tradition, like a lot of sort of mystical stuff, Indian artwork. So he came to this like with zero background at all. And that was what was so cool about it, is he kind of got it. He got the story, like even not, you know, not knowing any of the history or, you know, and I think that's actually what makes the art as strong as it is, because he brings that perspective.
Did you have to really think, like, for telling a story that is something that is, like you're saying, so inherent to your life, did you have to keep stepping back and be like, oh, wait, people aren't going to need to really understand this. They need to like see the larger world. Like, was that a difficult process, especially when you're working in such a group?
yeah, that was a challenge. And I think, you know, some of that we kind of dealt with by adding, obviously you can't explain everything in the actual novel. So we added a lot of back matter, which I think like anyone who's like interested by the story, they're going to just find a lot of really interesting historical information there that kind of like fills in the gaps. But like any good work of art, right? It should make you think. You know, I personally like reading stuff that doesn't give me everything right away, that I have to like work for a little bit. And this, you know, there's parts of this that'll make you work a little bit, and which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. Well, talk me through. So we have this first thing, which is the Felix Mad story. What are the second and third volumes going to be like? Are they going to continue along the line with the same characters, even though I know they're real life people? Are we going to get different pockets of the Reformation? How does it work?
So yeah, the series is called Heroes of the Radical Reformation. The Radical Reformation was a really small subset of the Reformation, which was started by Martin Luther. Probably most folks are familiar with, you know, the kind of the theses on the door in Wittenberg, yeah, and so on. But these were people who like got really radical and said, not only do we not want to have corrupt church officials running our lives, we actually want to just change the whole, you know, terms of engagement, and we're going to make life completely different. And these were people who believed in radical sharing. They believed that private, you know, in the abolition of private property completely, that everything should be shared. They believed in, you know, complete nonviolence. In all cases, even in cases of self-defense. So these are like pretty radical folks who were then also willing to, they were willing to face the consequences. And for many of them, for thousands of them, that meant getting killed. So we'll be following the stories of different ones of these guys. And each story is going to be very different because they're all very different personalities. And I think it's going to be really interesting.
Man, that's fascinating. So, yep. Justin, you were going to ask something?
I was going to say, so how far in the, do you have all of it sort of done? You said you're working on the second one, but the full story is sort of planned.
Yeah, yeah. It's all planned out, and should be wrapping it up in the next couple of years. So yeah, we'll be doing like a book a year, I think.
Wow.
Cool. Awesome. So the first book, like we said at the beginning, is out today. It's available in bookstores, digital retailers everywhere? Or is that
should be everywhere. Look for Bywater, the Felix Mann story. You can also check it out at the publisher's website, plow.com, plough.com. Probably the best way to find it.
Are you gonna head to a bookstore and sort of like kind of scout it out a little bit, or what are your plans?
I'm definitely planning to go to my local Barnes and Noble and see where they
walk in like a king.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Back to this section. What do we have here?
To my book. You know me. That's great. Congratulations on the book release. It is a gorgeous, stunning book. I was very bowled over by it, and I'm very excited for other people to discover it as well, and eagerly looking forward to the next two, however long they take. So we'll have to have you back when the second one comes out.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, Richard.
All right. Once again, the book is called By Water, the Felix Mads story. It's out right now from Plow Publishing House. So definitely check it out.
And that's so interesting. In my household, I was raised to worship Spider-Man. So like, I guess.
Oh, wow.
Different belief systems.
Yeah.
That's why I was sad the question about the movies.
Of course. And now we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience question. Comments, and we will get to them right now. But first, when we talk about what we are drinking, everybody knows I'm drinking the Shazamly because Shazamly matters. What are you guys drinking, though?
Thanks for really making that word happen for us all.
Anytime.
Yeah.
I'm drinking out of a Captain Lawrence glass. I'm drinking water.
Oh. Are you still on dry March again?
It's still March, right, Alex? March.
Are you on dry March again? That's hilarious.
Not my wife and I are not drinking in March, and it's fine. It's totally fine, especially right now. Pete drinking his native beverage, Florida Man.
That's right. Excellent. Keeping it in Florida.
Well, cool. Why don't we get to some questions here from Derek again. Alex, do you try to book your guests according to theme? I wish I could say yes, but it was a total accident.
Yeah.
Keeps working out. Or I keep.
I love questions like that. Where it's like, you guys do this interesting thing on purpose, and we're like, hell no. What are you saying? What do you mean?
But it worked out very nicely. It was very interesting to talk to them about it. Was two historical books. So there you go. We got another one here. This is from Stray Bullet. If you were starting a new religion, what would be your first three commandments?
Wow,
great question.
I like Derek Mainhart's follow-ups to that are no and boo right underneath Straight Bullet's question.
What would be your three commandments? I could probably do three commandments for Pete pretty easily.
Oh, yeah?
Thou shalt garbage plate.
Oh, I was thinking thou shalt not fold the comic books. That's at least.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Honestly, I feel like Pete speaks in commandments mostly. So there's a lot of easy
thou shalt easy do the do.
Yeah. Oh yeah, nice.
I'll come up with a third one eventually. Three commandments.
I know, I live pretty free of commandments.
Ooh, look so at far. You.
I do like that don't murder one. That seems pretty good. I feel like I'd keep that.
You know? Well, that's sort of a law now. So I don't know if you have to throw it in there. If you're starting a religion, you're like, so no murder here. It's sort of like, thou are protesting too much, cult leader.
Thou shalt not jaywalk.
Cool. Yeah. Law. When once now that we have laws, I feel like we can sort of slide those out of the way. Is something you got to throw onto the commandment pile. But maybe things like "thou shalt" like don't call me, just text, unless it's something that we really need to.
Thou shalt respect lost in this house.
Oh, yeah. Boom,
we already know that. But Alex, though, this reminds me, is unrelated to the question. Apologies to the asker of said question. But you had an interesting thing happen in your house that I think is perfectly germane to the comic book Shazamly that you're raising.
Yes, exactly. I am raising my little baby Marvel and my slightly taller Marvel. So my son, and I mentioned this a couple of times on this show and on the stack, we started going every Wednesday to the comic book shop, which has been delightful and fun and also just kind of fascinating. Pete doesn't care about stories. Fascinating to find out what he likes and why he likes things because he's 8 years old, you know, so it's definitely very different things that he's hooking into here. But one of the things that legitimately, and Pete will appreciate this, I've tried to dissuade him from is he got super focused and fascinated about Sins of Sinister, of all things. And to clarify, he knows who the X-Men are. He has never read an X-Men comic book. So he was like, what is this Sins of Sinister thing seeing ads for? And I was like, okay, it is too complicated. There's no way you're going to be able to understand what's going on. But he kept asking me questions. Finally, I was like, fine, here's what's going on. Explained like all of Krakoa, what's going on, Sinister, all of this stuff. And I was like, this is crazy, right? And he's like, ha, 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 what? That's crazy. Well, anyway, can we get Sins of Sinister? And I was like,
okay.
So this past week, they reprinted it. So we were finally able to grab a copy of the one shot because he didn't want to get any of the other one shots or titles or anything like that. He wanted to start at the beginning. And I thought that was a good place to
completest.
Be like, here, read this. Now you're not going to be interested in anything else. He read the whole thing, had a million questions during it, but then immediately at the end, he was like, so do they have the miniseries available? Can we get those? I was like, oh my God, those are even more complicated. What are you doing right now? But he asked me about that, and I was like, fine, we can look for them on Wednesday. Then we'll see if they have any copies or anything. But then right before he was going to bed one night, he came up to me. He's like, I have a question about Sins of Sinister. Like, can we stop talking about Sins of Sinister?
I love how over it you are. You're just like,
yeah, I love how this is torturing you. I love
I'm like, I talked to these two adult children almost every day.
I don't need this in my house. A comic book free place.
Yeah. So he did come up to me. So he asked me, he's like, so there's these three miniseries, and the way that they came out, everybody knows this if they look at the checklist, but he's like, so there's these three miniseries. There's Storm and the Brotherhood of Mutants, And then Nightcrawlers is released. And then there's Immortal X-Men. Those are the three miniseries that are spinning out. You got Sins of Sinister. And then the last issue is Sins of Sinister Dominion that wraps up the whole thing. And I was like, yeah, those are the three miniseries. And he was like, so was it on purpose that if you take the first letter of each of those, if you rearrange them, it spells sin? And I was like, I don't know. So
you just got replaced on this show.
I did get replaced. So what I did was I asked Karen Gillan. I was like, hey, my 8-year-old noticed this thing. Is this, he would like to know if it's on purpose. And Karen Gillan wrote me back and he's like, not only is that on purpose, your 8-year-old is the first person to point that out.
Wow.
Slam.
So Milo is going to be taking over from this point of the show. It was great knowing you guys.
Oh man, yeah. What a great get him in here. Transition of power. I love it.
He's already going to be the most observant of the three of us by a long shot.
100%.
Are you worried that he goes to school and says his teacher's like, "What have you been reading?" He's like, "Sins of Sinister."
100%. Here's the thing: is that I don't know this 100% for a fact, but like they're on the way to school. He asks me to Marvel quiz him is the way that he describes it, which has come up with quiz questions about Marvel. And I've figured out it's because that's what they do during lunchtime. Like they stand around and they're like, oh, I know these things about Marvel that you don't know. Here's a thing. And they like throw trivia facts out at each other. So that's where it kind of all started. That's what encouraged me to take him to the comic book shop. And yeah, I'm 100% sure he is telling all of his friends about
you got to be nerd ready when you're out in the streets and at school, man, because if you don't know your stuff, you'll lose your nerd card, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So he's got it in spades at this point. The other thing that I'll mention and just to ratchet this up.
Real quick, I disagree with Derek Mainhart. Your child nut flexing all over us right now.
Well, I'll tell him. I'll go wake him up and be like, stop nut flexing. It's not appropriate.
Again, maybe something with Sins of Sinister, you don't want your child knowing how to say.
Yeah, potentially. Oh, the other thing that I was going to mention is that he's been super into Avengers Forever, and that's branched out into now we're getting the volumes of Avengers, and he has a lot of questions.
So much to cover.
Too many questions.
Yes, he so far has not asked me about the scene where She-Hulk has sex with Thor in the hot tub, but we're getting there.
It's going to be a good way into the whole birds and the bees thing.
Yeah. Well, when a Hulk and a god love each other very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, we got a question here from Schoikler. If you could have any kind of puppet, what puppet would you want? Not only is this in Schoikler's area of expertise, puppets, but also I believe it's International Puppet Day or something like that.
Oh, man, what a day.
Wow.
What a day to be alive.
No, did you see? I don't know if you guys went into Manhattan, but they were putting up barricades everywhere because they're having a big parade, I believe, for International Puppet Day.
Yeah, it's like the end of Return of the Jedi around the world. Everyone's just dancing in the streets, puppets on their hands. I couldn't get anyone to answer an email today because they're all got their puppet hands in their puppets.
Out of puppet response. I don't know. What would you want? What would you want if you could have any puppet? Pete?
I mean, this is tough. I've been thinking about this a lot. I mean, I would kind of, I think I would be fun to have my head on a gorilla body.
As a puppet?
Yeah.
Or are you on that in real life? Why? I guess my main question is why?
I don't know. I just think gorillas look like badasses, so it'd be a fun puppet.
And you would puppet this around? Like we would talk to the puppet, or you'd be like a Jeff Dunham type performer that we would
I hadn't thought about that much. I was just thinking about what would make me laugh.
Okay. Just to check in here, you said I've thought about this a lot. Oh, and then you had a very specific answer. And then you're like, I haven't thought about it as not anything else. I just want it.
Yeah, if you're going to have a puppet, what kind of puppet would you want? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's weird. My answer is Pete's head on a chimpanzee. I feel like Pete took my answer in a way.
Oh, wow. I see why you're so defensive now.
If a serious answer I'll throw out there, when I was a kid, I had this very articulate Donald Duck marionette that I loved playing with. It broke. It's in like pieces and shambles and everything.
It broke because you were screaming at it for not being able to keep up with your hands, probably. Yeah,
probably. Anyway, would love to have
Dance, Donald.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
There we go. We've got maybe an easier question to answer here, though a little more complicated, from Ben the Border Collie. Why was there this expectation for Phase 4 to have a coherent story when that's not really how the MCU has ever operated? Like, what was the story of, say, Phase 2? Ooh, shots fired. Justin, I'm curious to hear from you on this one, because you've definitely been critical of the Phase 4 story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Phase 2 was all building that we're getting toward the Infinity Gauntlet there, right? So, like, I feel like there was a pretty directional story that we were getting at, and it was only being lightly teased. I feel like Phase 4 had the expectation of an overarching story, I feel like, and then there was nothing there, and in fact, the movies felt almost purposefully disparate. And the connective points were, what, Thunderbolts and things like that, that we're so far away from that it felt like a bit of a letdown. And now the movies are so interconnected, I think it's becoming like a barrier to entry. And I'm not just trying to be straight up critical about this, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think that's actually the opposite problem, because no, there is not a coherent story. Like, if I sat down and be like, well, let me tell you the tale of old Phase 2, that wouldn't make any sense. But the there was less product coming out, but it all set up the next thing. Like, when you went to see one movie, you were almost always guaranteed that there would be an end credit scene that in some way would tee up the next movie you're going to see. With Phase 4, there was so much coming out and so many different things, it wasn't immediately clear how one thing fed into the next thing. Like, I'm getting this order wrong, but, you know, thinking about, like, okay, I'm watching Miss Marvel. That tees up She-Hulk exactly how. And I think that was kind of the point. Like, what they were trying to do was set up a ton of different things so they could have all new characters, because they had cleared the deck from all of these old characters for the most part. But that did lead to this lack of coherence. They're not telling a story, but they are telling a franchise.
And I'm hoping that, you know, Marvel catches up to DC in this aspect and they start just doing bits, like running bits for their after credits, like the Shazam big callback that Zalbin loves so much was very enjoyable.
I did. We talked about this on the Shazam 2 podcast, the Mr. Mind Savannah bit, spoiler, from the end of Shazam 2. Very fun.
But it's a great, hilarious callback and a fun kind of acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that choice was made because they were like, hey, this is it, gang. you don't have to have a credit sequence for anything, because you're cut off. You're out of the Shazam league. Well, I mean, I think we're sort of saying the same thing, because when they started to be incorporating the TV shows and everything, it just felt a little bit like homework for a lot of people. And that made it less enjoyable when the teases earlier on were just like, were sort of strange and out of place, but they weren't complicated. It didn't feel like you were missing something. It was like, oh, this is just like, it's like at the end of a Bond movie back in the day when it would just say, like, Bond will return. And that's all you need to make us, yes, I'm excited.
The other thing that might have hurt it a little bit, like, if we're talking specifically about these end credit sequences, like, they weren't consistent. In Phase 4 is the other thing. Sometimes there weren't end credit sequences. So there were, but they were musical numbers or other things. Like, there was, again, not that clear direction of, okay, you're done with this. Now we're moving on to the next story in the Marvel Universe, because everything is kind of happening simultaneously. So maybe that's what they're trying to work out now, I guess, potentially.
Yeah. There we go. Maybe the most important part of movies is going to be the 30 seconds at the end from now on. And yeah, they can maybe not have it be as much of a thing for the first 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Maybe you could just to zone out for the first couple of hours and just watch the end credit sequences. Or alternately, maybe
I'm almost there.
Movie, they'll be like, hey, I'm Kevin Feige. Here's the next movie you're going to see.
It's really funny to just be like, yeah, this is, but next. It's so true of our culture right now, is to be like, this movie doesn't matter. It's the next one. You already paid for this one. It's so true.
We're already here. We already got you. All right. This is from Stanley. Do you think product placement in TV or movies could ever work well?
Well, I think, you know, Wayne's World is a perfect example of it working well, where they turned it into a joke and it was hilarious and a fun bit. You know, sometimes they can be done well, usually, though, it's pretty obvious it's an advertisement or product placement. So, yeah, I have as much fun with it as you can. Otherwise, it kind of pulls you out.
I mean, it's hard to, I agree with you about Wayne's World. It's super smart. Hard to do that over and over again. I feel like you can't really do that same thing again. You could have someone get thrown into a giant Pepsi bottle or something. But I don't think you can really do it over and over again. It just has to be, I think, diegetic. It has to be just something someone is picking up and drinking in the scene, not calling attention to it. And I think it does
well, but I think there are ways of doing it if it makes contextual sense. The first one that came to mind was Eggos in Stranger Things. That's obviously right. Product placement, but also the idea of Eleven coming into that store, hooking it to Eggos and being like, oh my God, these are amazing. I've never tasted anything like this before. And that's all she wants to eat. That's great. And granted, four seasons in, they probably pushed it a little too much and made it too much of a thing. But at the same time,
because you would think she would keep trying new foods, you know?
Right, but she didn't. She didn't. And she's very malnourished.
And that makes me very worried about her upbringing.
Yes. On the other hand, and I know Pete's going to take exception to this one, but I think the opposite end of the spectrum is the Skittles scene from Shazam 2, which is it aired on the side of being a Skittles commercial rather
than Taste the Rainbow, motherfucker!
That organically came out of the movie and they forced it. So it
not
needs to be
fair, glorious. It was hilarious and so much fun.
There's nothing organic about actual Skittles either. So it makes sense that it would be a little bit fake feeling.
Yes. There you go. I think that is it for questions. So we are going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Oh, boy. All right. This is the part we give back to the lovely audience. It's an opportunity for $3 comics online or, of course, Long John Silver's for some reason. But, yeah, it's an opportunity to partake in a very easy quiz.
And we do have somebody on, I believe they're on a YouTube in the comments.
Yeah, all right.
Jaron Townsend is going to do trivia for us tonight. Nice. So Jaron might be on a little bit of a delay, but you comment, you leave something there. And
you win.
You comment,
all right. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend, Lance Reddick, R.I.P. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Marvel is dropping Warlock Rebirth this April, written by blank. Is it A, J.J. Perry, B, Justin drank from a well, his teeth are messed up because of it, so don't tell me wells aren't like, creepy, or is it C, Ron Mars?
And while we're waiting for Jaron to answer, let me explain. I did grow up in a well. My teeth weren't messed up. I just, I don't have a lot of the same nutrition in my teeth, so that I would often get cavities. Famously, I had five cavities, one trip to the dentist, and I had to get them all drilled without anesthesia.
Yeah, it's a horrible nightmare.
So just to check, you said you did grow up in a well?
Yes, I fell in a well as a child, didn't have any sort of golden retriever to rescue me, so I had to live down there. Man. And all that tepid water made my teeth weak.
And all you had to eat was Eggos and Skittles, if I remember correctly.
Taste the rainbow, motherfucker. That's their
That's their catchphrase. Yeah. And Jaron is correct. C is the correct answer. All right, question number two. Tom Cruise has seen the Flash movie. He loved it so much he cold called the director. So is that A, a true statement, B, Elizabeth Saint, or C, no cap? This is a fun one because I will take either A or C.
No cap?
Yeah.
What does no cap mean?
It's the truth. True what? Statement.
No cap.
No cap. You're
so old right now.
Oh, okay. Sorry, teenager. Teen Pete
on the Teen Beat, getting the Tom Cruise insider track.
Yeah. Pete, were you up late watching footage from the Eras tour the other night? Just like really getting into that? grooving to some T-Swift.
A is correct. All right. Moving on to the last one. Here we go. Who is writing the new Comixology comic that is fast-paced action horror? Is it A, William Dafoe, B, Miles Gunter, or C, for reals, William Dafoe's face freaks me out?
He is also raised on Wellwater. So
yeah,
he
and no, I, cap, oh, right?
No, yeah, cap. No cap, no cap,
no cap. Slides right off the tongue. A man.
Oh boy.
Doug in the comments is also getting the no cap.
Yeah, there we go. Wow, this is great. We're really learning something from our teen reporter, Pete LePage.
Yay. And I'm sure he said B at this point. So yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, nice sorry. Job. Ben the Border Collie says, ha, ha ha, I'm surprised your kids aren't saying no cap, Alex. What about Bet? Sorry, Ben, they have too much Riz for that.
I don't know if you're using it. It sounds weird coming out of your mouth, but let me say it's very funny that, like, Alex, you don't know all these cool words, and your kids are saying things like you to you that are like, hey, can I read more Sins of Sinister? So.
Well, I'm raising them right, man. I'm raising them right.
Yeah.
So I think we have the right answers here. So, Jaron, email us at comicbookclublive@gmail.com and we will get you a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics or Long John Silver's, your choice. Pete, what is the secret movie you were referencing with this quiz?
Of course, I'm talking about the 2014 banger, John Wick, Slappers Only.
There we go. Excellent. And thank you for not doing Lance Reddick this week, by the way. That was very disrespectful of you. Okay, why don't we talk about what is...
Why would that be disrespectful?
I don't know. You should have done Lance Reddick, man.
I did do.
He did.
Wait, he did?
Yeah, why yeah. do you...
Oh, who did you think he said?
Attention at the beginning.
There you go. Yeah, you still did it.
I got a Lance lot of Armstrong. Tech stuff going on here.
Yeah. Okay. Oh my God. Hey, he's turning wait, not...
Well, I'm just gonna, so... We'll erase that part of the podcast. Pete, thank you so much for being respectful of Lance Reddick. Oh, anyway, beautiful. As we all know, new comics are coming out this week. What are some comics you're excited about, Pete?
I'm looking forward to DC's Legion of Bloom number one, Immortal Sergeant number three, and of course, Punisher.
All right. Justin, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
Couple interesting things coming out. I have been loving the new James Tynan book, Blue Book number 2 coming out, which was really cool to read. And then Amazing Spider-Man number 22. We're finally getting sort of the backstory on the Strange flash forward, and it's really coming into focus quickly what happened here. And this issue looks to be very good as far as opening up the sitch.
A couple of different books that I'll give a shout out to. I've been really interested in these One Bad Day books. I think they've been doing a really phenomenal job. There's a Rachel Gould
one. Oh, yes, dude.
Tom Taylor.
Hell yes.
Out today, actually. So excited to check that out. Also, The Neighbors, number one from Boob Studio, a new horror book that I'm very excited to talk to you guys about. And She-Hulk, number 11 from Marvel. Love Rainbow Rowell.
Yeah.
Love what she's doing on this book.
We're really worried about where that's going, man.
The whole She-Hulk,
my
Jack
ship
Picard
is
ship.
Destroying right now. Oh, my ship so is going bye-bye, it seems
top
like.
Top tier, man.
In the comments, we got Derek Mainhart shouting Isolation number 3. And then Ben the Border Collie, Nightwing and Deceased with the Tom Taylor fix. Derek Mainhart, GCPD Blue Wall number 6, which is already out, and closing up that interesting series.
Before we wrap up here, I do want to mention that this week's show is sponsored by our good friend Juan Espinoza, the man behind Bearded Comics. The goal of the company is to create stories showcasing Hispanic cultures. And they've got two great titles, Adventures of System Admin and Mythology Stories. If you're looking for a fun book about hacking into computers, it comes from an actual place of knowledge. Definitely check out all 6 issues of Adventures of a System Admin. You can also check out Mythology Stories, which is part of a successful Kickstarter campaign. It was highlighted as a project we love by the platform. Comics are available in all major digital platforms such as Amazon, Apple Dogs, and Library Pass. You can also find the physical copies and a great amount of merchandise at the main website, beardedmancomics.com. And folks,
That also, he was on the show. You can go check that out. It's cool.
Yeah,
check
absolutely.
Out. We had a couple of great chats with him a couple of years ago. A
couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Doug Bratton for being on the show. Yeah. Remember to check out Isolation, as we've said several times. Also, Richard Momsen, check out Bywater, the Felix Mann's story. Next week, big shoe. We're going to have Jesse Schurin is going to be here to talk about Zoops, the other happy place. We're also going to have Ryan North and Erica Henderson are going to be here.
Yeah.
Talk about their new original graphic novel, Danger and Other Unknown Risks. A couple of things to plug on our end. We mentioned it earlier in the show, but Sons of a Gun, our new DC podcast, it's going weekly. We got recaps of Shazam 2 coming up. We're going to be talking about Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, and other things. Also, Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We're now doing weekly news podcasts on that.
Yeah. There and I'll tell you what, they're fun to do. It's fun to talk.
Pete, you should come on sometime. Talk about some news.
I don't know, man.
Yeah. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night.